Blog Talk Radio.
South Park Coalition. We're just going to keep it going, man. Tonight we were highly honored to bring one of the dopest producers of all time. I mean, if you came up in the era I came up of, you're going to remember names like Amp Banks, you know what I'm saying, Sam Bostic, Mike Mosley. And of course, none other than K. Lou. I'm going to bring him out right now. How you doing, K. Lou?
What's happening?
Man, first and foremost, I've listened to your production probably since at least 1990. You've done some of the classics. Ice Cream Man, E-40, One Love. I mean, the list goes on and on. When did you get your start?
You mean in music, basically, or
production?
What?
And when did you open up the doors and say, you know what, I'm going to start producing?
Well, this is what I did, man. Back in the day, I taught myself how to play a bass, right? Mm-hmm. And I tried to, at the time, you know, musicians, you know, you played in a band and you played the clubs. It wasn't DJs. You played the clubs and everybody danced to what you played. So at the time when I was learning bass, I decided to audition for a few bands and didn't make any bands because I was just started playing bass. And when I got good enough, I made one of the best bands around at the time, but they ended up picking the guy's brother, even though I was better than him. So I said, you know what, I'm going to start my own band because you can't get kicked out of your own band. So I started my own band. Hey, bro, I started my own band, right? And being a leader of a band, playing top 40, as the leader, you have to know everybody's part. So that's how I taught myself all instruments, because you have to know if the piano player's playing the right stuff, guitar playing the right stuff, if the drummer playing. So I taught myself all these instruments, you know what I mean? And so that's how my production started, man, by listening to Earth, Wind, and Fire and learning everything from the horns, what the horns did, from what the piano did and what the guitar player did, what the percussionist did. And that's how my ear, I'm self-taught. So I credit all that to being self-taught. I never took a lesson in my life by anything. Always pick it up and teach myself, bro.
And that's what makes it much better, because, you know, a lot of people, same thing with me as a journalist. All my peers at Murder Dog, pretty much all of them, they wrote for newspapers, you know, other magazines, world-renowned magazines. I came in just, you know, I found Murder Dog at the liquor store. A year later, I'm writing for him. You know what
I mean?
You're
writing for him. Hey, yeah, I got you. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What the fuck? So, but yeah, that's cool, man. You self-taught your everything to yourself. When did you start producing beats for clients and different artists?
Well, the first beat I started producing was the group that I was in. And it's so funny, man. I just saw the yesterday. I saw the Compton, you know, movie last night. Uh-huh. And it's a part in the movie where Eazy-E is going to get his records pressed up, right? And it's a record label on the boxes that everybody was signed to. Even
McCola.
My group at the time was called the McCola Record. That's my first record deal was McCola Records. And a group called Kajamin that I was in. And believe it or not, I was the bass player and lead singer of that group.
Wow, no, this,
and, you know,
this was, not to cut you off, Caleb, but what era was this?
Oh, man, this was, 87.
Wow.
87. No, actually, it was before that. It was 80, let me see, when did, it was 85, 86.
You're talking about right after Two Live Crew released Revelation and
Yeah, yep, yep, yep.
We just had a West Coast roundtable, and my co-host for that show was clientele. So, I mean, that's crazy.
Oh, okay.
That you come from that same, you're a pioneer, man.
Oh, man, I'm an OG, man. And then at the time, McCullough Records had sent everybody that was signed to their label all the records that was done. And you believe it or not, I remember getting that. I cannot find that record today. If I had that record today, it would be worth something. But I remember getting that record from Ruthless Records, but I don't know where it is today, man. It could be in my storage. It could be anywhere. But, you know, Tony was signed to that label. A lot of cats were signed to McCullough Records. But that was my era, man. That was the era where, you know, the musician, the music was raw. You know, it was raw music, man. It was, you know, it was all original.
You know what I mean?
I got you. Hey, you're right.
It was pretty much, for the streets.
But everybody had their own identity, man. That was the beautiful thing back then. All the artists, no artists sounded alike back then, man.
No. You know? There was distinction, you know what I'm saying? You knew, if you
Absolutely.
Heard somebody from Detroit, you knew that motherfucker was from Detroit.
And you knew that,
You know, now you can't tell. Yeah, I completely agree. Now, you still produce today. You have to see a lot of stuff going on. Is there anything you won't tolerate in the studio? Because I feel a lot of these guys, they don't respect the culture. They don't respect the eras that were before them. Is there any time where you gotta say, you know what, get the fuck out of the booth or quit your shit?
You know, like I put on my post, man, I'm at the position now, not to say I'm all that, but I've worked hard and I got the respect where I can pick and choose who I work with. So, you know, knuckleheads I don't work with. You know, they never can set foot in my studio. You know, if you work hard, come do what you do, be creative. My spot is a business spot. It's not a hangout. You know, we can make good music and, you know, you can come by and drink while we're doing music or whatever you're doing, but it's not a place where you just come and hang out and smoke and all that stuff. This is strictly business, you know what I'm saying? So that's number one rule. I don't, I never have. Oh, no bull. Everybody who knows me knows K. Lou, and they know my rule at the studio. You know, and I'll do anything you want me to do, but ain't no bullshit going on, and we working, and that's how you survive in this business. You got to treat it like you got to treat it like a business. That's why it's called the music business. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's real talk. Here we got my co-host, Mac J. He's out of St. Louis. Mac, how you doing? What's up with the prayers, man? I'm sorry, man. I'll run a little late, you know. No, it's okay. It's crazy out here right now.
I can barely hear him.
Can you hear me? Yeah. You got an echo going on.
My bad, prayers. Can you hear me now?
There you go.
Yeah, I hear you.
Got you.
I've just been ripping and running, man. They out here. Yeah, man, it's Mike Brown and all that, man. Got the highways going
You're right
crazy.
There in St. Louis. So they got everything all fucked up out there in the highways? With a lot of law enforcement everywhere?
Not really law enforcement, but just people in the streets.
Mm.
Just people. So,
right.
Which means the police on their way type shit.
Yeah, well, be safe, man.
I'm good. Now I'm home. Shit, I'm...
Oh, you good? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, we got K. Lou here, and come to find out, I never knew this. He's from the McCullough era. He's part of the IT, the clientele, all that. Joe Cooley. Yeah, we had Fresh Kid Ice. He was on our West Coast roundtable, and you know, not only did he help pioneer the South, but he was one of the earlier pioneers of the West too. So it's crazy. At one point in time, you came across a guy named Percy Miller.
Master P. Miller.
As most of us know him. And
right.
Was this during the Intermittent Record days? Because I remember seeing your name on some of those earlier releases as well.
This was actually a little before the Intermittent days. This is like when he had that record store, you know, that he got.
Mm-hmm,
and I was recording in my mom's garage, and this had to be, I don't know, 86, 7, something like that, you know? And the guy told him about me. He came up, As soon as we started talking, I felt at home because, you know, I'm from Baton Rouge, really Port Allen, right outside of Baton Rouge. And the accent just, you know, it brought me to home, you know. And I had never worked with a guy, you know, from the South with that accent since he came in that day. And the first day we just clicked, man. And I remember times, man, he didn't have money for, you know, I only was charging $8 an hour back then in my little mom's garage. He would call for 3 hours, you know, $24. He didn't have no money to pay me, so he'd tell me to come to the record store and pick something out, you know? Hey, that worked for about five times, but after that fifth time, I said, nah, man, I want my money. You know what I mean? So that's how early we go back. And I remember picking out VSH tapes, whatever it's called. And we became really good friends, man.
And this was where, Richmond?
This was in Richmond, yeah. He had this store right across the street from the college, Contra Costa College. That's where my studio started in Hilltop in my mother's garage, man. People don't know this, but that's what the KLU stands for. My name is Kenny, and my mother's name is Lucinda, L-O-U, you know. So that's how KLU came about.
Yeah, it's more history, and that's where some of that's where the first No Limit songs were recorded, no?
Yeah, people don't know this, man. I got old recordings of Master P doing disco rap.
Disco rap. Wow.
One of them went like this. Master P is rolling on the MIC. He's rolling. You know what I'm saying?
And this is before he was doing disco rap.
Disco rap, bro. Yep, disco rap.
Still got that stuff. So that's never been heard before.
Well, not really. No, locally it did. I mean, him and his wife Sonya C, they were a group, and Sonya C had her own record. And man, I have a lot of those master reel to reels with all that stuff on it, man.
You got the originals. Is there any unreleased stuff from the No Limit era that you have?
Oh yeah, there's a whole bunch of. Oh yeah, it's a lot of that. But you know, I really don't own it per se, but I'm holding on to it. You know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so
that's history.
Yeah,
history.
Yeah, absolutely. It was songs we did, man, on cassette tape before reel to reel, four track reel to reel. You know, got a lot of stuff from him.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm talking about. Now, when you started working with him, the first project I believe was what was it, Getaway Clean?
Yep, it was Getaway Clean? Yeah, my memory, man, you got to excuse my memory. Yes, I think it was Getaway Clean.
Yeah.
You know 90, what? I'm not. 90, no, it may. Yeah, it might have been. No, it was something before that. That wasn't titled. But the one you're probably thinking of is Getaway Clean. It was so many projects and so many titles, man. You got to excuse me if I don't remember everything.
Yeah, no doubt.
But Getaway. Uh-huh. But he, you know, Master P was a, you know how Tupac, they say Tupac was a workaholic? You know,
yeah.
Master P was the first workaholic that I ever met in my life. I mean, this man never sleep, bro. You know?
It's evident. His hustle is just crazy. This guy comes out.
Oh, man, he never sleep.
Did you anticipate him selling, what was it, close to 75 million records?
Not at all. No, I did not anticipate that at all, man, because I don't think nobody did except him. You know, he had a vision. He had a dream, you know, and no, I didn't anticipate. But one thing that I can tell you that everybody can say about me is I had a lot of cats in my studio from famous, unfamous, and I never treated anyone different than the next. Yeah, because you was famous, you got the same respect as somebody that wasn't famous got. You know, I didn't let nobody bogart nobody studio time, sessions, what, you know, and because I do things just like I want to be dealt with, you know. So, but no, I didn't know, you know, I knew he had a mind that was always thinking and always planning something. But that's just a genius in him, man. That guy's a straight genius, bro.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And see, that's what I'm talking about, man. You worked with an era before him. You got to see that era and do what they did. Then you got to see NFP come along and evolve. At what point did you know No Limit Records was going to be the next big thing?
What point did I know that No Limit Records was going to be the next big thing? I guess it was when Master P, we recorded the Ice Cream Man album, right? Mm-hmm. And he asked me, he said, okay, man, Ken, you got to move to Louisiana. And I said, P, I don't want to move to Louisiana, man. My wife ain't going to want me to come. She don't want to go. And he said, okay, because I'm putting together this production team, Beats by the Pound, and I want you to head it, you know. And, I said, nah, dude, I still got a lot of acts I'm working with here. I don't want to be tied down to one company. I want to do, what I want to do. I've got a whole bunch of acts I'm working with. So he asked me, can I come down there and make sure everything was straight, still be part of the team? So I'm thinking I'm going to go to Louisiana, man, and we're going to be in a little garage or a little shack. Man, they picked me up, and everybody had brand new Cadillacs because, Cadillacs was the thing back then. In Louisiana in 96, you know what I'm saying? Everybody had Cadillacs, And they picked me up and they took me to a building on Corporate in Baton Rouge. And right then when I saw how they had everything set up, man, I knew everything was cracking, man. And I was going back there once a month for 15 days for the next 3 years, you know what I'm saying? And producing them records.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Ice Cream Man was one of them.
Ice Cream Man. We did, we did that whole album on the weekend.
Wow.
Yeah, because he had to turn it in real quick to Priority. He told him the album was done. It wasn't done, and we had a deadline. We stayed in the studio over the weekend and got that album done.
Holy shit.
Oh yeah. People don't work like that.
You're talking about the whole every track on there.
Everything done. We started a Friday night. We didn't leave till Sunday morning at about 4 a.m. Everything was done, mixed everything. And that's what you're hearing with the songs I did, like Ice Cream Man, No More Tears, and all that stuff. And the stuff that KL, Moby Dick sang, Mia sang. And you remember back then, they only had 5 acts at the time. It was P, Silk. Silk was new, but he was there. Mia X, Servon, Big Ed,
King George.
The
there
that was it. No, King George wasn't there.
Oh,
that
is,
thing with King George. After that, that's another story with what happened with King George. King George was his right hand man until they had a falling out, man, and that was it, man. Every time you saw P, you saw King George. And then later when you saw P by itself, it didn't seem right because, King was always part of the crew. And I guess, business, man, is money in business has its ways of pulling teams apart if you don't have everything situated before you get started,
A lot of people don't even know about King George.
Yep.
He was on the True album About It.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Very distinctive voice. And, King George was cool with me. He was my man. I continue to, produce some songs for him after that fact, I try not to get involved with the personal thing,
Oh,
I have love for everybody, man. No one can tell me who not to work with, So even though him and P was not together no more, if he wanted me to do something for him, I still done it,
Oh, yeah. You're deeply rooted in the underground. You work with so many people. Who are some of the guys? You work with SIBO, I imagine.
I never really worked with SIBO. I was tied up with back then, pardon me?
Of course, Selly Cell and the Click at E4.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I definitely worked with the Selly Cell. Back then, man, when you say, did I see it in Master P, was it going to blow up? You got to remember, I worked with all the acts that went certified. Like, I started, my first certified gold record was working with Into Deep on Back to the Hotel album. Even though Johnny Z was the producer, I helped him put that album together, and That was our first, that was my very first gold record, man. I did that on 8-track reel to reel, believe it or not, that whole album. You know, and look, people don't know this, but Run DMC came out here to work with us at my little studio on Barrett. You know, a lot of people don't know that, and because the label they were signed to was the same label N2Deep was signed to, was Profile Records, and Corey Robbins, who's the owner of Profile, felt that you know, Run DMC was on a downslide, so hey, we're gonna send them out to California, get with these fresh new kids, and see if we can come up with something. So they came out for about a week. They was at the studio. You know, I didn't think they really wanted to be there because they're looking at us like, who are these dudes? You know.
Yeah.
And I remember Jam Master Jay, all of them in the studio. We just trying to, you know, put together some music. And nothing ever came out of it, but they was here for a while. Nobody didn't know that.
And when was this? But this was the early days?
Yeah, this was the early. Yep, this is right after the release of Back to the Hotel, maybe a year, 9 months, something like that later. Yeah. That was the exciting times, man. And then, hey, also, man, I worked with, and that's the time, like I said, I saw the rise and shine of Sick Witty Records. That's when I tell people I met Skinny 40, when 40 was thin, you know? Hey, Mr. Flamboyant used to take over my sink when he come to the studio. This is what I mean when I say take over my sink. He used to come with his Carlos Rossi wine and his bag of ice. And he dumped the ice in my sink in the bathroom, and that was his thing. He lay on the floor, and he just do his music all day. You know what I'm saying? And this
we
got to
get
his 40
on here, too, man.
Oh, man, yeah, he'll be great, man. This is my friend, man. I haven't actually seen him in a while. We used to keep in touch. I was, you know, at the house a few times. But, hey, since he moved doing his thing, you know, I keep doing my thing. But I'm here if he needs me. I'm quite sure he'll be there if I ever need him for something, you know.
You ever had some of his wine, Earl Stevens wine?
Oh, yeah. Hey, man, one day I was driving home, and, you know, I live in Fairfield. And it's got this liquor store, you know, going toward Rancho Solano. And I say, man, what's all these people over here? Somebody say, oh, E-40 in there. I say, wait a minute. So I park my car. I walk to the door. It has security. You know, people stop you at the door. And I put my hands up. He saw me. And he said, oh, let him in. So I went over there and chopped it up with him and got some of his wine. It's pretty good wine, too, you know.
That's what I heard. I haven't tried it yet, but I heard it was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, Moscato. Oh, it's real good. Real good. You know, really good. But, yeah, just that and the early days of JT the Bigger Figure, the great late Mac Dre, a lot of cats I worked with that maybe didn't hit the maps nationally. But, oh, man, I worked with countless, so many different acts, man. It's just... But mainly in that era, man, No Limit took up a lot of my from 90s to actually 2000. All my time
say,
was 90%.
You produce a Ghetto Thing, too, on that True album?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot of stuff on that album.
That song right there, I still bump that song at least once.
You
maybe
do?
In between one and three times a week. That's a cold-ass song to me on that
you
album
like that?
At that time when it came out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's...
You know what I'm saying? That's one of them songs, and the beat went with it perfect, the way it was laid down and the way P
right.
and Silk and them rapped on that shit.
Okay.
That's one of my
right
favorite No Limit songs. And there's a couple people that's listening right now, the huge No Limit fans.
Okay.
That's one of their songs, too. They hitting me up on Facebook right now saying... And,
You know what? I got
on the Silk
oh,
album.
Oh, yeah, I got
to,
you know... I gotta
That's
go listen to that stuff, man. Okay, yeah.
People still
you know,
listen
when I,
to
when
song
I,
every day to this
yeah.
day.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's still
once
relevant.
In a while, I might put something up, you know. But yeah, those songs bring back a lot of memories, man. Fun in the studio, you know, just creating, and, you know, having fun, you know.
Now E-40 wow. took over the sink. What was Master P like when he would come to record? I mean, it sounds like you guys just got down to business 2 days and
oh yeah, four yeah, P never
you
drank
got a whole
smoke.
Album done.
Oh, it was totally different, man. No disrespect to Sick With It, but you know, the No Limit situation, looking at everything, was more their business was just a little tighter. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And like I said, no, it ain't got nothing to do with the talent aspect. It's the business side because, hey, you know, anybody would agree that, you know, E-40 can rap way better than Master P, but the business side of it, you got to give the nod to No Limit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So,
it was handling that business.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Servon and Fiend and a couple other guys from No Limit on the show. And Mr. Servon told us, like, they had, like, a family-first atmosphere at No Limit. Like, it wasn't just a whole bunch of dudes on a label.
Nah, man.
Like,
that's...
He made them do things together and kept them incorporated with each other to where they was, like...
Definitely.
It was family-oriented for when they did
definitely.
Shit. So there'd be problems and arguments and shit that outside people wouldn't understand. But deep down...
Nah,
inside,
man.
He told us Mia X. He was like, Mia X was like... She was Mama Mia for real. She cooked for everybody. Everybody looked up
to
her.
Oh, yeah.
The big mama of the crew. And
the
I
big
always
mama of the crew. You're right.
Of, No Limit and shit.
She always calmed people down. She was definitely that person, man. But Servon is totally right. That's one thing I miss, man, that it was, like I said, one reason why it made me sacrifice and travel that far every month was that family atmosphere more than anything. You know, I knew I was getting a check. But I'm saying it was that family atmosphere where everybody looked out for everybody. It wasn't no hate, no anything. You know what I'm saying? It was like, it was just a perfect situation in the beginning, them first 3 years. But then later on, when you start getting more acts signed, and it started getting crazy, bro.
Now,
you know?
I got another question real quick. Now, with the Straight Outta Compton movie that just came out,
mm-hmm.
right? They already proved they can market a movie from... pretty much our era of music and culture. You think?
Mm-hmm.
I think No Limit need a movie too. It need to be on the same type of scale movie about No Limit. Do you think they'll ever make a movie like that? And do you think you'll ever be highlighted, or P and them will tell the right story? Because people need to know about what Master P did for the culture and for young black men to be able to make money in the music business.
Right. You know what? I'm not sure. I know he's talking about it. I've been seeing stuff online where he's going to do his biopic, but I'm not really sure because you would have to do it the same, but it has to be a little different. It can't be the same thing to really this soon to work that quick. It would have to be somewhat different, man, to really, because it'll be too much negativity. Oh, they copied the NWA movie. Or they just took their script. It has to be different. It got to be. Now, if it would have been done first, hey. But if it's done different, man, I think it'll work, man. Will I be in it? You know, hey, if I'm in it, if a character of me is in it, it's cool, you know. But I won't be hurt if I'm not, you know.
Right. But I would think they would have to, because some of the biggest hits they had, especially in the early days of No Limit, meaning like 95, 96, 97.
A lot of
people look at Ghetto Dope, the shit that made
it. Yeah, no doubt.
You had a lot to do with a lot of them songs, man. I still bump. Like I said, Ghetto Thing, How We Mob.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you gave them that Cali feel. You know what I'm saying?
Like, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
It was the
mob
KLC
music,
gave
the rider
the
music.
South, you
like,
gave them the West.
Yeah, right.
Just like they had their soldier songs and shit like that. You gave
right.
When he said Richmond, California, you made people feel him being living in Richmond, California.
Right, right. I had my own unique style too at the time, man, and sometimes I wish I can go back to that and do something like I was doing back then. But yeah, I mean, you're right, man. The album I was on, the Ice Cream Man single that really went nationwide. Yeah, I was a part of that. I'm really honored to be a part of that. And it's always going to hold special. Like, when people ask you, what's your favorite album? Is it the four times platinum MP The Last Dime? Is it the Snoop Dogg double platinum album you produced? I said, no, it was the gold record Ice Cream Man. You know,
yeah,
that's
that was
the first
shit,
one. And that was lovely, man. I really had fun doing that. But,
did you make back up off me on that album too, on the Ice Cream Man? Did you produce that song, that track?
No, I KL did that song. I remember KL doing that song. I think I played something on it. That was one thing about us producers, man. Somebody come up with a song, you know, everybody, If you got an input, an idea, let's go for it. You know, it wasn't individual stuff. That's why the label works so well. Everybody, if you had an idea for a verse or you had an idea of a word, everybody was open to use it, you know? And, you know, that's how you construct a company that went on to make $300 million and sell 75 million records. You don't do that if you got individual. Yeah, you don't do that if you got individuality in a group, in a company. You never can do it if everybody's not on the same team. So that was the best part of it back then, man. Yeah, but back to your question. Hey, if it's one, I hope it's one. So
yeah, because I think it's gonna take off with a genre of hip hop themed movies. They already know they can sell. And it's a lot of stories that need to be told, especially in this time and age with a lot of the young guys not really knowing the history of the game for real and what y'all had to do to get them to where they can do what the fuck they doing right now. They don't even understand what y'all went through.
Mm-mm.
Mom and pop shows, showing up here, showing up there, CD places, staying up late night in the studio, selling CDs, risking getting life and limb, just you guys wanted to do, man. I salute y'all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's so funny that I took my daughter, 16-year-old daughter, to see Compton, right? And after she left, when we got home, she started listening to stuff online and the VA stuff. And because she didn't realize, she said, "Dad, did you go through that too?" I said, "We went through the exact same thing. Not as bad with the police because they paved the way for us to say what we want to say." You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But a lot of the stuff we went through characterizes exactly some of the stuff they went through as far as the running of the business part of it. You know, how it starts real good, everybody's family, then at the end, you're making all this money, it tears people apart, and you're getting all these other people influencing. And that's how that happened, man. So she said she was sad about what happened to Easy and how everything broke up. And I said, "Hey, that's life. That's how things happen, you know." And
right, it's part of the biz. So
it's part of exactly
the business that y'all in, man. It's like it's a wicked business.
Yeah,
it can turn the good men into bad men. It can turn the bad men into good men. You know what I'm saying? But
right,
one thing that don't ever change is the music, and they cannot even if they try to hide it, they cannot erase the things
history
that you guys did. That's why we do what we do, because a lot of people don't know. They don't know who Kendu is. Even if they heard Master P say your name on a song, they don't know who you is. And now you're right.
Absolutely, because I'm a dude. Everybody knows me, man. I'm in the background. I don't like I don't like being in front. I like to be, you know, people ask me all the time, do a video, be in the video. I said, "Nah, man, I'm cool." You know, no disrespect to them. That's just ain't me. Yeah. I was asking being about it movie, but I didn't want to do it. You know, I didn't do it. So.
Hey,
that ain't me.
Got a caller from France. He wants to ask you a question. Lord Sinister, what's up, Sin?
Yeah, what's up? What's up? It's called what's up, Mike J? What's up, Kalu?
What's up, man?
Professor,
how you doing?
Nick. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm pretty much a lot of radio show. So I have one question about the artist you produce. As Lolita Lee, aka G-Not, you produced this album on your independent label, Kalu Records. It was Full Blown, and you was also on top of the world, like as an associate executive producer for this project on Enemy Records. Can you tell us about him and Folk Mob Group? Also, you produced Mr. Bubba.
Okay, let me tell you what happened with my No Limit and Kalu record situation.
Mm-hmm.
Master P was getting me for a long time, say, "Man, you got to start your label, you know," and I always put it in the back burner. And then he said, "Man, you know, this ain't going to last forever. You should start your label." And I finally started my label. And I told him I had an artist. And the first artist I really had signed to my label was a young artist from Vallejo named Young Flay, Mr. Ropadope. And at the time, I wanted to put him out. Mr. Ropadope had got arrested when I had everything started rolling for my label. And as soon as he got arrested, I had to go find another artist. And the best cat I knew after that was Gino. They call him Gino, Lil Gip.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what had happened was, I said, dude, got an opportunity here. You signed with me. We leaving tonight to go to Louisiana work on this album. So he signed with me. We left. As soon as Master P saw him, he named him Lil Italy. Right off the top. You know what I'm saying? He said, oh, you Lil Italy. And we said, oh, okay, Lil Italy. And we worked on his album. Everybody got on it. We all worked on it together, man. It was fun. And unfortunately, it was toward the downside when No Limit popularity started going down a little bit, that even though my record sold 300 some thousand copies, it didn't go gold and platinum like everything else before that point, because I waited so long to do my own situation, you know. So and then later on, you know, we tried to do another record with independent distributor after the No Limit deal. It was called Full Blown. It didn't do it didn't do as good as On Top of the World. But let me tell you something, man. Lil Italy is one of the best rappers, the MCs I ever worked with in my life, man. That's, he is so talented, you know, with his style. It's just uniqueness. And I just think toward the end, you know, No Limit, people that like No Limit wanted that South, you know, and he wasn't really from the South. And but hey, we tried. But it sold some records. It sold some records.
Right, and
you
got an underground following from it too.
Ghetto
Fame, Ghetto Fame was very good, very good track, you know.
Right, Ghetto Fame. You guys was playing. Yeah. Hey, you guys was playing Ghetto Fame in France a lot, huh?
Yeah. Of course.
Okay. Yeah. Also
the all your tracks like Ghetto Tang, Just Classics, or for sale, How We Mob, or The Presidents. Or moving through my hood.
Okay, thank you.
That's that mob style.
Right.
I remember when the Ice Cream Man dropped out when I was going in my summer going into my senior year of high school. So
is that right?
Them was the soundtracks of us going from Boys to Men, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Some people listen to Boys to Men, Silk and Shy and all them, but this is what we listened to going into what we was doing, and it was the backdrops of our youth, man. Y'all molded some of that shit. That's why I'm glad, like, the N.W.A. movie came out, because this is shit from our era that my children are at.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all
right.
Coming in the full fold, you know what I'm saying?
I think it's great, man.
I was just going to say, I only wish, though, that it told the truth a little bit more about Easy, because he didn't die on his way to being broke. The guy just had Bone Thugs and Harmony sell, you know, 3,
right.
4 million. He sold 3,
right.
4 million. You know,
right.
But maybe there's going to be a documentary. I think his daughter's coming out with that documentary. If they do a No Limit film, what do you think your input's going to be in it? Do you think they're going to, get input from you, or?
Well, I'm not really sure, because, you know, the way the N.W.A. movie it came out is like you got Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, you have the main members of the group. You know what I mean? And with No Limit, It was all of us. Master P was the colonel, but it wasn't a group. It was a family thing. It wasn't like
it couldn't work without everybody. It couldn't just be only Master P.
Yeah, it would have to be everybody involved with it. But I'm not sure if he would go around asking everybody if they, you know, Master P. You know, he kind of can do things the way he want to. Like I said, I won't be upset if he want my help. I'm there, man. No question about it. I'll be there. But, you know, just to tell the whole story, kind of like they did in the beginning days, because that's the rawest in the beginning, how he built everything, you know, and you got to include the early stuff, because the later stuff don't come if you don't have the early stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Same as
the NWA stuff, you know? Yeah, Ice Cube wouldn't have worked if you didn't have NWA, you know what I'm saying? So... You gotta have it. But you know, like I said, man, I don't think I would be a producer. No, of the show. No, I definitely don't think I would be that. Now, if he want my input and say he want to use my likeness and name, oh, he could definitely do that. Definitely do that because, you know, he started this with his dream and vision. He brought me along for the ride. You know, those NWA guys, they all, even though EZ started, they was all together all the time with that.
Yeah.
It was a point in time where, it was a point in time, like I said before, I was asked to go down there to live, and I didn't want to do it, but I was still part of it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, that was later on.
That's cool that PM did that for you, too. They weren't like, this nigga don't want to come live with us. Fuck him, then. He knew me.
Yeah. Oh, no. P knew what kind of guy I was, man. Like I said, we became friends before we really started doing. The first day we met, we became friends that day, man. Sometimes, you know, that friendship, you know, money can't take over that friendship, bro. If you're real friends with somebody, money don't matter.
By any other artists out of New Orleans, like say for instance, did any Cash Money artists ever hit you up for sounds to make their shit sound not similar to Peter, but like capitalize
no, not
on
really.
Type of-
no, not no, not at all. Nobody down there. Nobody contacted any of us during that time. You know, because you know you got to understand it was like. We two different armies, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And one army didn't mess with the next army. Even though Mia X knew them guys and she used to record with them guys back in the day, when she came to No Limit, she never was a guest appearance on any of that stuff, and she knew them.
Right.
So it wasn't out of disrespect. We just never did. You know, they did their thing and we did our thing. Even though we came along first, you know, they came along. They took it to a next level. You know.
Right.
They were just the next thing. There was a little more at the time. They were a little more raw, or more, you know, raw than we were. You know what I'm saying? And that enabled them to take over. And hey, you know, it was cool. I like this stuff, man. The production, Manny Fresh. You know, hey, it was all love. So I know KL and Manny, they knew each other pretty good. But it's just like your homeboys on a different basketball team. You ain't gonna play with their team. You gonna play with your own team. Try to beat them, right?
Right, exactly.
You know, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. No disrespect, but we were trying to keep our position.
when y'all come play us, we got to win. If y'all win, it's all good. But
it was different. When I came back to the Bay, everybody wanted tracks from me. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of spread it out like that. You know, if you notice, when I came back, I really didn't give nobody that South sound. I kept that my Bay South just for No Limit at the time, you know?
Right.
And I gave everybody else something different, you know? Selly Sale, if you listen to his stuff, it don't sound like No Limit stuff. It's different, you know?
Exactly.
You might have a little influence.
Yeah, he don't get enough
sound like
he should either.
Oh, my. Oh, Selly,
you know,
man.
Saying?
Selly
like,
is
me personally, I'm a Selly Sale fan, so I could be a little biased, but I don't think he gets enough. People should know about Selly Sale as well.
Right. You know, you're absolutely right, because you got to – back then, other than, you know, being 40, Sale was really the first one to crack on that label as another dude, you know. You got to click in E-40, but remember, Sale had a big album, you know, that I even think today, like you, he should have been a bigger artist from that record. But
going down.
Unfortunately,
still get played. That's like a top 40 hip hop.
Somebody
song. Still gets played on my playlist at least 3-4 times a week. It just pop up. And what I love about them songs like that is when like younger cats that really like the older music, they hear it and be like, "Man, well, who is that?" I'm like, "Man, that's Selly Sale. You know what's going down, but you don't know this song. No, you didn't know he did this. You didn't know he did this.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like." Love to hype younger motherfuckers up on the shit that y'all created. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, so get a real job. Get a real job, so it's crazy stuff.
Yeah,
Thank you very much.
We can go back Thursdays all day long and post songs that you probably produce, and somebody like, "Oh, I didn't know they made that." You know what I'm saying? Like everybody on Facebook, Instagram, like TBT, this, TBT. We can do that all day long with what you guys did.
Okay.
And this, I'm just glad I came through that golden era. Prez can speak. Me and Prez the same age. He's a few months older than me, but we all can feel that same love. You know
age
what I'm saying? I'm glad
beauty.
You guys.
But,
okay, yeah. I appreciate it, man. I got...
No, it, what's crazy is, you know what I'm saying, you're kind of like the Mike Fresh of the West Coast, because you think about Mike Fresh, he produced platinum stuff for New Jack. See, he was the producer on Luke Records after Mr. Mix left.
Okay.
He produced a lot of tracks for Poison Clan and stuff, and a lot of hits. You know, some of the stuff made it
right.
to Boys in the Hood soundtrack. Same thing. Well, even Mr. Mix, mm-hmm. look at all he did. You know what I'm saying?
You know, Mr. Mix was recording at my studio after he left there. We was working on some stuff together. Sure.
Did you know that? When was this?
You know, I can't. This was right after he left Two Live Crew.
This is 92 then.
Yeah, 91, 92. Yeah, he was working out in my studio, man. Sure was. He had his 12 SP-12 on it, working and scratching, and we was trying to put something together. You know, I don't know what happened to the stuff we did. I think we worked for a few months.
Oh, man.
We worked for a few months.
I'd love to hear that shit, man. I imagine that.
You know, it's probably in my vault. You know, I got all my reels is in my vault somewhere. I would have to look for. I got hundreds of reels, man.
Yeah, you probably got it somewhere.
I got it in the vault, man. I got all that stuff. I got the original Ice Cream Man. But, yeah, Mr. Mix, man, that's my dude, man. And
Hell of a producer.
He came right after he left them, he came. We was working together.
DJ Ready yeah. Red, did you ever work with him?
No, I didn't work with him. Uh-uh.
Yeah, he was the guy who gave the Ghetto Boys their sound.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the first guy to sample Scarface in a
really?
Track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Balls of My Word. I don't know if you remember that song, Balls of My Word, way back in the day.
Right.
That's history. What was it like working with Mr. Mix? This was a guy that, you know, went to the Supreme Court and fought for freedom of speech. What was it like working with
you
him?
You know what?
You guys were label mates at McCola, weren't you?
Man, yes. Mr. Mix is the most quietest and chill dude I ever met. I mean, this dude don't sweat. He don't raise his voice. No matter what you say, oh, okay, you know, okay. He's just so chill, man. He's just a great dude to be around because his vibes are so deep and he got good vibes. You know what I'm saying? When I say good vibes, you just, you know, you want to do anything for this brother because this brother do anything for you. You know what I mean? And he was just like that. He was just chill. He was a chill dude, man. And I'd love to get in contact with him. I haven't talked to him in years.
Man, we had him on the show about 200 episodes ago.
I used to be in contact with him a lot,
but it's a very unfortunate thing because, see, he helped create Two Live Crew. It's him and Fritz. And legally, he can't even say the name no more. And that's so
at all, huh?
Up. No.
Yep,
because we want to do like a live round table and have everybody on, and it's just something that's not going to happen right now at the time.
Ain't that crazy, man?
Luke went bankrupt, and his lawyer came in and bought up everything, I guess.
Right.
And the lawyer has the clause on the name to have for everybody, pretty much. It's fucked
and
up.
Prince made it where the time can't even use the word the time in none of their stuff. Ain't that crazy, too? Morris Day cannot use the time. That's crazy.
Because Morris Day just came here to St. Louis like a month ago, and it was just Morris Day.
That's right. You can't use the time.
Morris
Prince going to sue you.
Yeah, he couldn't even use it.
Yeah.
Name,
that's crazy, man.
Crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah. So, like, hey. Yeah, that's why you got to know your business, man. You got to know your business. Or them lawyers. Like in the movie Compton, Jerry Heller, he knew the business. He took some money. He took some money, you know. So
yeah, we've had Jerry on this show several times too. Jerry, a cool dude, man.
Yeah, we had him on.
Like what Jerry say, man. The game was, you know, designed before he even got in the game. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
But he
right.
just played the game the way, you know, some motherfuckers know how to play the game and some motherfuckers don't know how to play it.
Well, there you go. You don't know your business.
If they your homie, they're going to show you the game, but it ain't their job mm-hmm. to show you the game. Maybe Cube was smart for not signing and doing his own thing. If he hadn't have done
right.
that, we wouldn't have this movie that we're talking about right now. You know what I'm saying? So
absolutely.
Everything works out for a reason, but one thing I know about...
I want to see if he does it. That's the movie I want to see.
Yeah, I want to see if he does it.
Don't get me wrong. I want to see a straight out of Compton flick, too. But I would like to see a Ghetto Boys movie, a No Limit movie. Even been an early West Coast pioneer documentary. Now, Clientele, you say you worked some stuff, some documentary stuff. Are you going to be involved in any of that, or?
Hey, well, like I said, man, you know, I haven't heard anything about it. If I'm asked to do anything, man, I'll do it, man. It's just if I'm asked to do it, I'll do it. It's I'm cool like that. I'm open to anything, you know. It just depends. It's so funny. It's about I don't know, what is it, 3 years, 4 years ago, I got a call from EMI Music. They asked me to put. They want me to be. To work in a special, in a vault department. They have a bunch of releases they want me to put together, NWA releases, and make albums and compilations. And so I went to their vault. I picked the songs I wanted. You know, I had to talk to Tamika and okay some of the stuff with Tamika Wright to get some of the songs. And I was asked to do that. I did it. People don't know that. You know, I did a few releases, you know. With that situation with Priority EMI, who owned the catalog.
Wow.
So whenever I'm asked to do anything, it's called the NWA Family Tree. Yeah, that's the name of the CD.
That.
You can look it up. Yeah, yeah, I put that together for EMI, for Priority, yeah?
Wow.
Yeah, executive produced that, yeah.
So,
and,
so
you
got to see the inside of the vault that could contain the...
They got a lot of stuff,
ever
man.
Heard.
Oh, they got a lot of. Oh man, they got old stuff going back so old, man. They got everything in there, man. And I was able to go in there and just pick what I wanted, and if I wanted something, they had to make sure I can use it. From, you know, a couple of things I wanted to use, Cube said no, you know, because I guess he was saving it for I guess this time. And but Tamika was real cool, man. She was really cool, you know, because we had to get the okay with her. But the vault got a lot of stuff in it, man. Think about Priority, man. How much stuff they have. And that label really started it all with the West Coast and the gangster rap, you know?
Crazy
right.
D. Crazy D, the guy that was on NWA and the Posse. He let us hear a 30-second snippet of a song called From Around the Way that Dre had gave him. Way back, you know, like he'd give people,
really?
Like, hey, check out this song. Yeah.
Yeah.
We played it on the show. I got it right here if you want to hear it. It's
Let me hear it.
Quality. All right, here you go. Check this out.
Okay.
Yo, Rendezvous, man, what's up?
Nothing easy, what's happening?
Nothing much. Let me tell you about this party I went to the other night.
West LA?
Goddamn right.
Dude,
went to something like this.
Went to a party in LA one night. Had a fat burger for my appetite. Sucker said, yo, should I stop? I won and said,
you killer got the semi-numbers.
Body walked in and heard the DJ scratch. So I bailed to the floor and did the cabbage patch. Looked to my left and there they stood. Cold tearing shit up was the boys in the hood.
Did you ever hear that?
Oh, that was dope.
Hey, that's crazy.
See, after watching Compton, man, that can go right now. After watching Compton...
You
want to
hear the rest of that, don't you? I told Crazy D, it's like, that's a fucking tease, you asshole. I want to hear the whole goddamn
man,
thing.
Yeah, man. This movie can allow that song to sell some records, bro. I'm telling
you.
Just remaster it. All they got to do is remaster it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and Crazy, shout out to Crazy D, that's the homie. He came on the show about a month ago, and he announced that he had about 10 or 12 unreleased tracks. You know, Dre would give him tapes. You know, Kyle, I'm sure you've done that, like give a couple tapes to your friend.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what do you think of this song I'm doing?
And, yep, I've done it.
Right, and he saved these tapes over the years, and he told us on the show he'd give us one to play, and he gave us that song to play for our 200th episode a couple weeks back. So shout out to Crazy D. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But the homie from France wants to ask you one more question.
Sure.
You on the line, Sin?
Sinister.
Lord Sinister.
He at the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, he's over there somewhere. He'll probably call back.
He might
back
got somebody
kid.
In. He might got a chick in the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, he's,
okay.
he's over there doing his thing.
He said, hold up. He said, hold up.
He's over there.
I'll get to you.
We in it.
He definitely. Yeah, I mean that guy's a huge supporter of the show.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Definitely supports. Not just the show, but so many people. And there's a lot of cats out there that are like that, that are really huge fans of hip-hop. Do you get a lot of people that hit you up and just want to chop it up with you about old times and things of that nature?
All the time, man. And honestly, you know, believe it or not, I talk to a lot of people, man. If you send me a message on Facebook, if I'm sitting there just chilling, I'll answer a lot of people. I talk to them, you know. I've invited a few people to the studio I never met before, you know, because I chatted with them and they were sincere about the history. And hey, you know, I invited them down. We talked, and it was great. You know, as long as it continued to, you know, go that route, I don't mind. You know, you want to know the history, you want to know what it was like back then. It's, what can you do as an artist today to you know, to kind of do the same thing? I don't mind, you know, sharing that. You know, cause I seen how it worked from the ground up. You know.
Yeah, definitely.
This
dude is back.
Yeah, I'm back. I got one question. Can you tell the Barrier Mob Funk sound is very different from the heavy sound? So you have along Day Real, Mike Mosley, or Sam Bossy, Craig B, or Lev Burlak. It's way more a funk. More low and bass sound. Can you say us about the mob funk? The mob funk and mob shit. Now,
I didn't
Rosetta
understand
Stone.
It. What did he say?
I need Rosetta Stone for that one, Sin.
Say it again. I didn't quite understand you.
Oh, I was talking about the Bay Area mob funk sound, very different from the LA sound. Can you explain about it? About the production, more bass, more low, more funk.
Let me explain Bay Area funk to you. I mean, Bay Area mob. Bay Area mob is studio tone. One of my top five favorite producers at all time. If it wasn't for studio tone, we wouldn't have had mob music. And I don't care who knows it. Studio tone was the orchestrator, designer, maker of mob music. His style created that for E-40. He created that mob, how you work the kicks. You know, I had my own style, but doing that early stuff, I worked closely with Studio Tone, but I engineered all that stuff. And a little bit of that style grew onto me a little bit because I saw how he put it together. I really liked his style. From there, you had Mike Mosley, who was under Studio Tone, which is he's another good producer. But Studio Tone is the creator of that mob. Mob music wasn't about bass. It was about melody. That was the difference. Mob music had melody. You know what I mean? You got the South. LA isn't mob. LA is a feeling to me. It's like the LA scene was more musical also. You know what I'm saying? Later on. But you got the underground stuff like you did the NWA. That's totally just straight drum driven. But the South stuff at the time is mostly bass, you know, it's bass with, man. I brought the melody. I brought the West Coast melody with that low end, you know, bass. You know what I mean? That was my creation with that.
I remember One Drop Scott or Evan Jarrell, Mike Mosley, Craig B, Lev Burlak. I mean, it was really mob shit, honestly. Just crazy.
Right. Right, all the guys you mentioned are good producers, man. You know, they're really good producers. This is just, I had a little more luck on my side because the guy I was working with, he paved the way for all of us. You know, I'm not no better than none of those producers. I just happened to be on the side where a guy made it big, you know, and I just happened to be there. But all those guys that we all produced, we all played music. Everybody can play something. You know, and that was the difference. You know, we didn't come across where we didn't have the equipment where you hit one button and it does everything for you. You had to play back then.
It wasn't just fruity.
You know, if you didn't know how to play. If you didn't have to play, if you didn't know how to play, you wasn't no producer back then, bro. You know.
You came back from a way as a bass player and lead vocalist for the Bay Area band Kajamin. So you was funk at the earlier, you know?
Yep, that was my thing, funk, because I was a bass player in a funk band, and that was my style,
yeah.
Funk, you know? And I don't know if you guys listen to a lot of my early stuff, you will hear live bass and guitar on a lot of my stuff.
Yeah.
You'll really hear that.
Yeah.
Especially with the Mac Dre stuff. I played live bass and guitar on a lot of that stuff. And that was
I was
going to
ask about Mac Dre, man. He seemed more like he was really into the musical side of things. What was he like working with?
Mac Dre was, man, God rest his soul, he was a prankster. He was a jokester. But when he got in the booth, he was all business, man. This guy crack on you, and you better not say nothing because he won't let up. You know what I'm saying? He was he was that kind of But I understood that because it's like me today. If I don't make fun of you or joke on you, that means I don't like you. When people do that, that means they respect you. They just want to joke with you. You know what I'm saying? That's their relief. Mac Dre was a good dude, man. He was, you know, he was fun to work with. I enjoyed it. You know, when he got out of jail, I didn't know him before the whole thing. When he got in, you know, before that. But after he got out of jail, man, he came to me because I guess he heard about me, and we worked on a Rompilation 1 and 2. And then he said, man, I just want two cats to work on my record, you and Funk Daddy. And I think Johnny Z did one song. But it was just me and Funk Daddy was the producers
Daddy
on that
Seattle,
song, Doodoo
right?
Dumb. Yeah, yeah, another good producer, man. Another good producer, man. Funk Daddy.
Yeah.
He plays, hey, man, he can play every instrument, too. So, but,
he was a good dude to work with, man.
Never had no problems with none of them guys, man. Mac Dre was cool, respectful. You know, they came to me when they wanted it done right, so. I did it right. I make sure everything is right. You never lost nobody's material. You know, you go to studios now, somebody go and, hey, man, load that song up I did last week, and it's gone. It's, you know, you'll never see it again. That wasn't me. You know, like I said, mine was ran like a true business. So, but, yeah, I wish we could have did a Super Duty Dumb number two, but, man, fortunately that couldn't happen. But that was, you listen to his album, you hear live guitar and bass all through that.
Oh, hell yeah, man. You know, rest in peace to Mac Dre. Yeah, it was a real unfortunate thing what happened. I mean, the game's at a loss when you lose somebody like him because he's one of those guys. He was an innovator. You know what I'm saying? He was other dimensions with it. You know?
Yeah, he was that animated guy that started to see where you had to go to be. International, you know, star. He didn't want to just be stuck in one element. So he was just moving to that, you know, because he was getting to all them different characters and everything. And he was about to really blow up, man, you know.
He's a genie, a tennis player.
Yeah, he was all that.
He was just basically showing you how you can have fun.
He showed you how to have fun.
I definitely see that. I mean, they got a bobblehead of him. I mean, he was a character. He was a real person, but he was a character.
Absolutely.
To the point where he had that talent and that persona to do whatever he wanted. Too many guys get taken too soon, unfortunately. Hell of an interview, man. I want to thank you for coming through. You know, a hell of a show. Is there anything else you want to say before we go? And also, please give everybody your social media in case anybody wants production or features or studio time.
Well, unfortunately, I don't just give out studio time like that. I'm just more of a, you know, private little studio where I can just, I'm not really open to the public like I used to be. But if you want to contact me on Facebook, I'm Kenny K. Lou Franklin. You feel free to hit me. I'll hit you back. No problem at all. If you got any questions for me, again, that's Kenny K. Lou Franklin on Facebook. The Real K. Lou on Instagram, The Real, TheRealKLOU on Instagram. So I don't have a lot of social media, man. I don't do that like I should, I guess. I have somebody else to do that for me. But, just listen to the music and enjoy it.
Right.
Yeah, that's all I can really add to it, man.
Well, we appreciate it, and keep making hits. know what I'm saying? And digging them vaults, man, you got to put out some type of a project of unreleased material. So maybe you can get together with, you know, No Limit or whoever. See if you guys.
K-Lew unreleased production. What about K-Lew's unreleased production?
There you go.
Make it do, yeah. And it'll be a lot. Hey, it's a lot of stuff on there, man. Mac Dre, even some E-40 stuff that never made it into the light of day, you know. A lot of No Limit stuff. JG the bigger figure. Hey, a lot of cats, you know.
Man, that's a whole legendary era right there. And come out of two legendary eras, you know. So,
right. Right.
You know, keep doing your thing, man. Thanks again for coming on the show. I appreciate you.
Hey, my pleasure. Anytime,
yeah, no
man.
Doubt,
you guys
man.
Want
Thanks
to have me,
through,
I'm available, man. Thank you very much, man. My pleasure. I had fun, man.
Oh, definitely. Hey, before we go, K-Lew, can we get a drop from you from our radio station?
Sure. What's the call?
It's a UGF radio.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
Yo, this is K-Lew, and you listen to UGS Radio. Let me do it again. Is it .com or what?
You
something else?
UGS Radio at UGSforLife.com.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah.
What's happening? This is your boy K-Lew, and you listening to UGS Radio at UGS.com. Stay tuned.
Hey, that's what it is. Take care, K-Lew. Much appreciation, brother.
Thank you very much. You guys have a good one, yeah?
All right, you too, man.
All right.
Very humble guy, man. What a episode, Mac. Episode 205 in the books. Been meaning to want to add K-Lew into the archives for a long time. Shout out to Shin for hooking me up with K-Lew. Real humble dude. It was good to chop it up with him, too, man, because the history that he has is so rich, you know what I'm saying, in the West Coast.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Influenced a lot of people.
Yep, and like we were talking, which we talked extensively, a lot of the No Limit hits. Like, yeah, they had beats by the pound, but they had that was what's so good about No Limit. They had so many dudes that had so many different hits, so you could pick and choose. So if you go into certain eras of No Limit, if you go to the early stages of No Limit, K-Lew has some of the biggest hits on those No Limit albums. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like
of course.
Deep songs, the street songs, the songs that cats in the hood, they didn't necessarily play them on the radio, but the street cats would listen to was probably penned and put together by the guy we just had on the show.
Yeah, you definitely got a huge arsenal of hits coming out of this guy's studios and production over the years. You know, hell of a guy too, real humble. I don't think I heard one F-bomb out of his mouth. I'm like,
yeah, and it wasn't no me, and it wasn't me,
this,
me,
fuck
me.
That,
it
fuck
wasn't,
you.
It wasn't. Yeah, you know how motherfuckers be like, oh, when I was doing this, it was me, it was me, it was. No, he wasn't on that. He was telling
he's
you what he did
what
and how
we were
like
doing
shit with other motherfuckers, and I can respect a motherfucker like that, man.
Oh yeah,
that's
definitely.
The real shit.
Definitely. Always good to be humble, especially in this industry. We're going to get out of here. We're going to get out of here with a classic song. Hopefully the volume isn't too loud because of vlogs.
And prayers tell them to tune in to KFYB Saturday because it's my motherfucking birthday anyway. So, you know what I'm saying?
Saturday,
I'm going to have
birthday
and KFYB. Damn right. 30. I'm going to be 25 for the 12th year in a row. Put it like
there
that.
There you go, 25 for the 12th year in a row. Happy early birthday, man. We'll definitely tune in. KFYB, 7 p.m. Central, 5 p.m. in the West Coast, and, of course, 8 p.m. in the East Coast. We're getting out of here. This is the Ice Cream Man. See you guys later. UGS
for Life.
UGS for Life. Com.
Weak ass. The motherfuckers on the YouTube page that were talking that shit, bring it to the door. Y'all know what number it is. Call in, bitch.
Oh, yeah, West Side. Fuck that motherfucker.
Ice Cream Man. Yeah. Mr. Ice Cream Man. Mr. Ice Cream Man.
with some better jabos, a pocket full of stones, 3 G's and trying to lose these hoes. In the task coming sick cause it's the first of the month. Fiends on my page like I'm trying to take these fools to lunch. Going crazy in the ghettos trying to kill me. My little homies lost his life, y'all fools feel me. I pack a heat cause I'm paranoid at nighttime. Rust be pulling jacks, I'm in the hood busting gangsta rhyme. And still gotta watch my back in the hood G like Spice One Sex. These fools living like the movie. Little kids get body, I mean my hood is rowdy. I'm trying to make a dollar 50 cent before I'm up in Ali. Mr. Ice Cream Man, or call me Master P. I got it 2 for 3, call me if you need some deep. Me and my little brother Silk, we be ballin'. Got this thing sold up from Texas to New Orleans. And cross the West Coast with fools, get wicked. I'm in the game, hella deep, tryna score a meal ticket. Breaking fiends on boulders, I mean A1 soda. Ducking a task and trying to hide from the rollers. And hanging with troops, so this is my true click. We true to this, true to the G-A-M-E. Fool, we ain't new to this. In the hood, I got ice cream cones. And if you fiends wanna lick nothing for free, that's gonna cost you 20 bones. For y'all ballers that one way, call me on the page. I got half gallons of milk, fool, I got 31 flavors. Mr. I-C-E-M-A-N is on the scene. You better have my fatty if you don't have my cream.
Ice cream man.
Let's see who owes me cash. I got to go to the grinds and get mine. Fools be trying to check it, wreck it, but it's about that time. So who owe me, pay me now, don't pay me later. Crooked alligators trying to scheme off the top. Well, they be like player haters. I got some 2 for 3, 4 for 5. Got them rock for killers. I got 2 for 3, 4 for 5s on Max and Glocks. You can come and check my grip. You can come and check this. But I'm on them triple golden 9 Skrilla Lexus.
Master P in the 500 SEL with a triple beam. You scream ice cream with them fiends screaming for ice cream.
Before you jump in the game, let's get one thing understood. If you're selling an ice cream, you got to make sure it's good.
He's the ice cream man. He's the ice cream man.
Master P, I'll call me the ice cream man.